Okay, our next presenter is Dr. Joseph Griesbach. I can say the Latino names really well, but Wake Forest School of Medicine. He is the Kaiser Family Endowed Professor of Family Resilience. His research focuses on the health-related implications of everyday work and family life, and his research is supported by the National Institute for Child Health and Development and the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. Please join me in welcoming Dr.
Griesbach.
Oh, that's very different. Thank you.
All right, so my name is Joe Griesbach, and I'm going to have you shift gears here a little bit. You know, we've the theme is across the lifespan, right? So far we've seen adult women. Then we saw school-aged children or school-aged girls. Now we're going all the way down to preschool. And one of the things that I need to make clear right from the get-go is that most of this work, and in fact it's ongoing, Grizel Trejo over here in the front row, she was nodding her head when she saw the slide, Program Management Matters, because she is the ongoing manager of this particular project. I am now with Oklahoma State University, and so there you see the band of characters, my co-conspirators, if you will, to which much of the credit belongs to for this particular presentation. Of course, the family, the financial support, we need to get that out there, and it's also important to point out that I have no conflicts of interest or nothing else to report. So let's get on to the task at hand. You know, some of this has already been foreshadowed, so I'm not going to belabor it too terribly much, with the hope of maybe having more time towards the end for everybody to engage in a conversation together. But of course, the obesity epidemic is something that you'd have to be living underneath a rock if you didn't know something about it. But one of the things that we know in particular, as has already been pointed out, is that the obesity epidemic in children is particularly high in Mexican American or Latino kids. Of course, physical activity, if you go back to the basic checkbook equivalent of what does obesity come from, that is energy in and energy out, physical activity is a fundamental component that contributes to obesity. And in young children, the National Academy or the National Associations of Physical Education recommend that young children, preschool-age children, get at least 60 minutes of unstructured play, read into that physical activity every day. And they further advocate that young children, ages 3 to 5, engage in no more than 60 minutes of sedentary activity in any stretch at a time, except for when they're sleeping. And I'm emphasizing that particular point, not necessarily because it's, you know, hard and fast and there's good scientific data that's underlying it. You know, we like to think that all recommendations have good science under them, but frequently they don't. But the point is foreshadowing some of the things that you're going to see here shortly with regard to children's physical activity. Now, more directly to the context of this particular presentation is children in farm worker families. Now, many of you probably know, but some of you may not, is that about 75% of all farm workers in this country are Latinos. The vast majority of them are from Mexico. And many of them have children with them. These data are now old, but unfortunately we can't seem to find anything more up to date. But at least as of 2000 or so, there was an estimated 880,000 children in farm worker families. Most of them are young. Most of them have been born here in the United States, which I think we saw in one of the previous slides. And parents, of course, are primarily foreign-born. The important point of this particular conversation, though, is that, like their parents, children are a health-desperate population. I mean, you see some basic information there, like elevated incidences of chronic and acute illnesses. You see that they tend to be behind in school. And that you will also see that they have generally poor oral health, physical health, you know, all sorts of different sorts of health outcomes, and many lack access to basic health services, despite the availability of migrant clinics. And then when we bring it to the task at hand about obesity, the prevalence estimates, trying to get your mind around this is really hard because most of the data come from very small region-specific samples, but they range anywhere between 23 and 73% of young children, that is 3 to 5, as being obese. So clearly there's substantial need for understanding the things that contribute to obesity in young Latino children. Our point of view, whereas there's these great presentations that have been put forward on basic interventions, our point of view is that we need to know something about the basic phenomenon before we can go in and do an intervention. So for example, in a previous life, I used to do worksite health promotion, and we just sort of assumed that some number of people were engaging in physical activity, and so you start from that average level of physical activity if you're going to try to increase it, or likewise with diet, likewise with smoking, and those sorts of things. Our point here and behind the project that I'm going to introduce here in just a moment is that we need sort of the basic science underneath the behavior patterns in place so that we can design the most appropriate interventions using the excellent tools that are already in place from some of the other community-based interventions that are there, but being driven by what we know as far as what is actual behavior and what are the factors that contribute to variation in that behavior. So in my world, the everything comes down to goals and specific aims. And so my goals and aims for this particular project is that we're going to have, by the end of the session, we're going to have an improved understanding of Latino farmworker children's physical activity habits. This is mostly going to be descriptive data, folks. And to accomplish that, I'm going to describe farmworker children's physical activity, and then I'm going to delineate some variation in levels of physical activity among those kids. The data for this project come from the Nino Sanos Project. It is a 5-year study that's funded by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute for Child Health and Human Development. It has two fundamental components. The first one is an in-depth ethnographic exploration of children's physical activity and diet habits. That we did that with an N of 30 mothers. I will not be presenting data on that today. But then the second portion of the Nino Sanos Project is a quantitative component where we propose to collect data from 250 parent-child dyads, and the child had to be 3 years old at the time of baseline survey, and we follow them quarterly for 2 years. So then by that point, we'll have a good idea of sort of the waxing and waning of physical activity, of eating habits, and we are about, I'm just going to take a crack here, somewhere around 70% through data collection. All baseline data have been collected, and that's what I'm presenting on today. And then we have a mismatch all the way through between, you know, we have yet to complete some period 7 and 8 interviews, but we're probably about halfway through the period 5 interviews, and we have just about all of the 1 and 2 interviews. So the point is that this data collection is going to be spanning a lot of time. The data collection consists of at least two elements. The first is an interviewer-administered survey questionnaire that we conduct with mom at each of the observations every 4 months. And then secondly, we had the children wear an accelerometer for 7 days. So that's where the physical activity data are coming from. With regard to the physical activity, again, these are based on baseline accelerometer data. And the protocol required that we had to have at least 5 days of wear time. And wear time was operationalized as at least 8 hours of the device picking up some level of movement. So that's what we mean by a day of wear time. What you see here is that we had really very good compliance here. About 85% of our children met that wear protocol. And I would go so far as to say that it was our project staff's good thinking that kind of says, you know what, maybe if we give kids this little goal chart where they get to put stickers up and we show them goodie bags of things that they can get when we come back, maybe that will help. And sure enough, it works pretty well. Those kids are pretty excited to draw a toy out of the bag if they've had their chart filled as far as the number of stickers that they needed to accumulate. So then we download those accelerometry data, and then we take a look at the actual counts that the accelerometer device was moving, and you see the cut points there and the foundation for it. The whole point that I'm trying to get to is that whereas the previous farm worker research that has focused on children has been very qualitative in nature, and what I mean by that is even the survey stuff has been relatively soft with regard to its assessment, this is as good a physical activity assessment as we're going to be able to get from anywhere. So that's why I'm going through the level of detail about these accelerometers for those people who aren't familiar with those devices. So here is our sample, and the thing that I'll just simply draw your attention to, there's nothing outstanding about it, except it looks like a relatively typical farm worker sample. So the mothers in our sample are relatively young, very low education. This is fielded in eastern North Carolina. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the farm worker scene, you know, North Carolina is a relatively newcomer to the farm worker health. The vast majority of the research has been taking place, of course, out of here in California, but we've seen substantial growth in the farm worker population, Latino farm worker population on the East Coast. And so all of this is all these data are being collected in eastern North Carolina, where the migrants tend to be new, they tend to be from rural areas, they tend to be young, and they generally tend not to travel with families. And so you see that laid out here as far as the age of the moms, the educational attainment of the moms, and the place of birth for the moms. With regard to the children, you might recall, hey, wait a minute, Joe, you said that the kids had to be 3 years old to be in the study. Obviously, there's nothing magical about 2 years and 364 days, so our actual recruitment was essentially from 2.5 to 3.5, and so that's what you see there at baseline as far as the percentage of kids who were 2 and 3 when we first enrolled them. You see that we're pretty even with regard to gender, and you also see that we've got a distribution about migrant versus seasonal. Now, we could spend an entire session talking about what exactly a migrant farm worker is, because all sorts of folks use different definitions to figure out what a migrant farm worker is. From our point of view, what a migrant farm worker is anyone in the household who has traveled more than 75 miles for purposes of work in agriculture. Okay, so if they met that definition, then we call that a migrant household. By contrast, if they say, no, we pretty much stay put here, we don't move around and we work in farm work when we're able to, those are the individuals who are classified as seasonal farm workers. And then again, as you see, you know, fully 98% of our kids were born in the United States. So here's what children's physical activity looks like. And I'm purposefully going slow through this slide and the next slide to draw your attention to a few important things. The first one is, if you take a look at the column that says the full 24-hour period, you might go, well, 44% non-wear time, that seems like an awful lot. But remember, a wear day was 8 hours. The vast majority of that 44% of time was when the kids were sleeping. Okay, so that's why it's as high as it is. But then take a look at the classification of activity in sedentary, light, moderate, and vigorous activity. 27% of the time was in sedentary activity, 27% of a day was in sedentary activity, 28% in light, and less than 1% in moderate or vigorous. If you convert that into minutes, we see that there's about 400, roughly, minutes in sedentary activity, 403 minutes in light, and 8.2 minutes in moderate or vigorous physical activity. So the point is that we're a far cry away from the notion that every child should be engaging in at least 1 hour of active physical play every day, and that children should avoid more than 30 minutes of sedentary activity at any one time. Now, we haven't yet done the analysis to see if that 395 minutes is broken up into a series of 15-minute chunks, but based on the evidence from our ethnographic stuff, that's not the case. It's not broken up into a lot of chunks of 15 or 20 minutes. It's hours, next hours, next hours of doing different things. So this next slide tries to break things apart a little bit to kind of say, well, now, who is it? So if you're going to think about targeting a set of kids, who would be most likely, or where should we get started, or how can we think about targeting that in a meaningful fashion? And what you'll see here is, at least with regard to light and moderate and vigorous physical activity, there's relatively little variation with regard to some of the standard social address kinds of variables that you might think of. Not unexpectedly, because it's in the literature, you know, boys tend to be more active than girls, but we're talking 2 minutes. We're not talking wholesale hours. So boys do engage in more vigorous physical activity. And then at the bivariate level, family farm worker status and Head Start attendance, which, quite frankly, they kind of go hand in hand. The migrants are attending East Coast Migrant Head Start for the most part. I mean, there's a little bit of overlap. But what you see is more sedentary activity among the migrant farm workers and among those children who are attending Head Start. So the strengths and the limitations of this particular presentation is that, quite frankly, this is the largest study of farm worker children's physical activity. This is really the largest study of farm worker children's health that uses these kinds of rigorous assessments. We've got diversity in both seasonal and migrant farm workers, and we've got objective assessments of physical activity. The limitations, of course, is that it is just in North Carolina, and at the moment these are cross-sectional. And 2 years from now, we should have our full repeated measures data that we're going to be able to give you all sorts of fancy things with regard to patterns over time, but we just simply don't have those data yet. The punchlines, though, that I'd have you take away is that very few, if any, children are meeting the recommended levels of young children are meeting recommended levels of physical activity. And that's a fundamental starting point for thinking about interventions. If you buy into the whole notion of stage of readiness kinds of thinking, if people aren't engaging in an activity, well, to initiate the activity requires an entirely different set of procedures than to take people from having at least some levels of physical activity to more levels of physical activity. So that's the first take-home message from this. The second take-home message from this is that a bunch of these children are engaging in prolonged bouts of sedentary activity. Now, therein may be the intervention point. So the reduction in screen time, for example, may be the place to get started with this particular segment of the population. But nevertheless, that's the second punchline. And then the third punchline, and this may be somewhat contentious, and I don't throw it out to make anybody mad, as much as to say that child care facilities are probably fundamental in helping to engage in physical activity. There's a large literature outside of migrant health and outside of children's physical activity that clearly points to the value that educational systems like Head Start place on children who are well-behaved, engaging in nice, quiet, brain-teasing kinds of activities, in part because it's good for psychosocial development and cognitive development, but also in part because it's easier to control and contain. And so this really raises, to the extent that this holds up over time, it really raises questions about the extent to which we're able to infuse and allow active physical play to engage and to enable getting the levels of physical activity that these kids need. We've shared this with our partners at East Coast Migrant Head Start. They frankly were a little aghast because they thought they were addressing this. But yet at the same time, there's the difference between a policy as it's written and a policy as it's implemented. And I think that's where we're going to have to start making some steps. And with that, I thank you very much for your time. I understand there's time for questions. Yes, ma'am.
Maybe part of the problem with the Head Start not doing it, I mean, I hear what you're saying too, and I agree, is that maybe the instructors don't know what to do with the children. I mean, have they had that training, and how do we get them involved in active
You know, that's a really good question, and my understanding from the Health and Safety Committee of the East Coast Migrant Head Start is that they are working very hard to provide those teachers with the equipment and the resources to help facilitate physical activity. And so I know that they're aware of it, and I know that they're working on it. But as an N of as a parent of N of four children, I totally also understand the challenges that come into play because you just want to kind of sometimes contain the damage. And even in some of our in-depth interviews, what we see is parents talking about, no, you can't do that because you could break something, right? And I know, again, I do that with my children. So this isn't unique to Latino children and farm worker children at all, as much as to say there's sort of this balancing act that, yes, we need to help equip teachers in the classroom to enable active physical play, but it's also against the backdrop of, well, wait a minute, East Coast Migrant Head Start and Head Start in general is targeting the cognitive and the emotional development of children, perhaps at the casualty of the physical development of the children. And that is a much broader debate that we need to figure out how to navigate that, again, is not specific to migrant Head Starts and Head Starts in general as much as early childhood care in general.
And even when
that's right. That's right.
The kids don't now know how to organize themselves to play four square jump rope.
That's right.
We had to teach them how to do that.
That's right.
Another question?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, not so much of a question, but I actually work for Mercy County Head Start, and there has been more emphasis on physical activity within Head Start. Our team at Mercy County has been trained on frequency of SPARC, and I am moving and I am learning, as probably I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Just the policy, we are implementing those things. So we are seeing the greater level of physical activity.
And then, of course, the extra challenge that goes along with some of that, and it's not to make okay or otherwise, is, of course, many of the Head Start centers that are operating don't have some of the equipment that allows for perhaps some other children. Not that it's all equipment-driven, but certainly if there's fun play apparatuses, it makes getting physical activity a little bit easier. Is there time for
more
questions?
One more.
Okay, one more question, please. Sir.
I had a question on the accelerometers, kind of getting an idea for what vigorous, moderate, active play might chat with parents of a 2 or 3 year old. Could you tell them if that kid's not sitting in front of a screen, what level is it for a 2 or 3 year old is crawling around on the floor?
That's an excellent question. I was frankly hoping to embed some of the videos that we used to help people. Again, I need to vacillate back to the qualitative portion a little bit. During our qualitative interviews, we showed the parents video clips of what was sedentary, what was light, what was moderate, and what was vigorous forms of physical activity, because, of course, you're not going to send a 2 to 3 year old out to run a marathon, right? It's really easy to say, okay, see that person who's running and they do it for 15 minutes? They're engaging in moderate to vigorous, right? You know, kids do things in short bursts. And usually what differentiates them is the amount of locomotion that's required, how much movement back and forth, as well as some appraisal of the overall intensity that goes into it. So if they're running back and forth and jumping up and down, that would be classified as vigorous. And so you could imagine the typical up and down off a slide, monkey bar kind of an arrangement as being illustrative of vigorous physical activity. Whereas the light forms of physical activity, that would really be more of the meandering around the playground, maybe kicking a ball every now and again, maybe riding one of the tricycles that are available there. Those would be examples of light activity. And then the moderate, of course, is right in the middle, depending on the combination of some of those things. So your point is really well made, and that's why I was trying to highlight, even though it's somewhat abstract, those activity counts, because the accelerometer is picking up activity in both the vertical plane and the horizontal plane to try to get at all the jumping and bouncing and forward and backward movement, because that's what's sending the device to sort of notch each count of activity. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Pfeiffer and colleagues did a validation study of that particular device that we had used against VO2 Max. Thank you.